Good day. We are so thankful that this congregation chose to put this on. Thankful that the work's gone into the topics and thankful that you've come here to study these things. I told Penn, if I go long, don't do nothing. Just stay as you are. Not giving up on the fight. Jesus said, let your waist be girded, your lamps burning. And this teaching means be prepared. Isn't that what that means? Be prepared. He goes on to say, you yourselves be like men who wait for their master when he will return from the wedding, that when he comes and knocks, they may open to him immediately. Blessed are those servants whom the master, when he comes, will find watching. Assuredly, I say to you, that he will gird himself and have them sit down to eat, and he will come and serve them. And if he should come in the second watch or come in the third watch and find them so, blessed are those servants. My buddy Paul, always we call each other about once a week, and it's always, hey, what's going on? And then it's, how's the family? And then we proceed to talk about the church for 20 or 30 minutes, and then I say, hey, one of these days, we're going fishing. One of these days, we're going to go black bear hunting. You remember that talk we had? That we're going to go. One of these days, we're going to Amazon, and we're going to fish for peacock bass. One of these days, we're going to do all this stuff. Well, let me tell you, have yourself prepared for the Lord. I think that's good advice. Have your loins girded, your lamp burning, and be prepared. You've heard some really wonderful teachings today about how to live and things to avoid, things to set your mind on, all very practical. And I've enjoyed every talk very much. I feel a little bit guilty about my cell phone and my Facebook stuff, so I really need to work on that some. But you know what? When you walk out those doors, the world that we live in has not changed. It's the same old rotten world. And it's really bad. Really bad. So I've been learning about this AI stuff, and I got this guy, and his lamp's lit, and he's girded, right? The truth is that hard times are coming for you. That's true. And that's one reason you need to be prepared, and you need to have a mindset that I'm not going to give up on the fight. I'm not. How many people here are married? If you're married, raise your hand. Well, a lot of people. One of you will bury the other. Unless the Lord comes back, that's true. There's a hard time coming. I know three different couples who both died on the same day. So maybe statistically there's a chance, Jeff, that y'all could just die the same day. One of them was a car wreck. I wouldn't recommend that. But you know, the facts are that you're going to have challenges in your life. You're going to be tempted by Satan in your life. There's going to be pain and trials in your life. You're going to deal with loss. That's a fact. So how do we live in this old crooked world that we live in and face the challenges and the trials and all the heartaches? How do we do that and not give up the fight? I'll tell you, one of the conversations me and my buddy Paul have from time to time is about our time here when we lived in Lubbock. We're going to school, and there's been a lot of years that's passed. How many of those who were here then are no longer faithful to the Lord? It's heartbreaking. It's a significant number of people who've quit the fight. And I'm going to tell you, every one of those people that have quit and walked away have had a lot of this. And truth is, you will too. Are you spiritually, emotionally, mentally prepared? Is your lamp burning and your loins girded? You've got to be ready. And I think that's part of my job today, is to encourage you in this way and maybe give you a few things that perhaps will be encouragement. I don't know if anybody here knows who this is. Does anybody here happen to recognize this photo? This is Brother Don Kaiser. Paul, you remember Don Kaiser? Member of the church, served our country in Vietnam. And when I was some younger, he would come out and his son, we'd go hunting together. We'd go deer hunting and got to spend a lot of time with Don. Don is kind of like me. He's a work in progress as far as his Christian walk. But he was a man who loved the Lord and served the Lord. And we was out talking one day. We got home from hunting deer, which is really hard work. We'd hunted deer all day long. I pulled my boots off, and I kicked my boots off in the floor. And man, my feet, it felt good to stretch my feet. And Don says, "Sean, what's the longest you ever went without taking off your boots?" And I go, "Probably today." He said, "I went 33 days in Vietnam and never took off my boots." I don't know if I'd want to do that. I know I don't want to do that. The question, I guess, is could you handle that? Now, maybe you're thinking, "Well, Brother Sean, I'm not in Vietnam, and I'm not in," and that's true. That's true. I read a book one time about a man who is a POW. I'll just stay on the Vietnam theme. And they put him in a bamboo cell, and they kept him in that cell for 4 years. He never got out. And in this book he wrote, he said, "I was going crazy, just plumb crazy, because I couldn't stand up and I couldn't stretch out." And he said, "I decided I had to use my mind." And he said, "I decided I would build a house." And in his mind, he built a house. He went and picked out the lot. He dug the footing with the shovel in his mind. And he put in the rebar and the concrete, and he poured the foundation, and he drove every nail. And he hung the drywall, and he painted and run the electrical. Built the house. Kept him from going crazy. I want to tell you, our minds are amazing. It kept him sane. And you know, after 4 years, he got out of the cell. And he ended up going back home. And can you guess what he built? And people came up and said, "Where's your blueprint?" And he said, "It's right up here." And can you control your mind in that way? Now, maybe we would call that mentally tough. Maybe he's a very mentally tough individual, and maybe that's true, and I don't suppose those things necessarily have anything to do, but my talk's supposed to be not giving up on the fight. There was a couple of brothers, and their name were Wright, and they decided they were going to build an airplane, not just a glider, but an airplane. And Wilbur Wright said this in 1901, "Men will not fly for 1,000 years. They'd had a particularly bad week. Do you know when the Wright brothers flew? December 1903. He was off a little on his estimation. I'll tell you one thing, he didn't give up. What seemed impossible to most people wouldn't thought it was a realm for man to be, he didn't give up. So, can failure cause us to quit? Will failures cause you to give up? I will tell you, you're going to find in life you will fail. You will make mistakes. You will have regrets. And you will wish that you did things differently than what you did. Vince Lombardi said, once you learn to quit, it becomes a habit. Well, that's probably true, isn't it? How do we stick, or how do you stick with hard jobs that are in no way enjoyable? Can you go through extremely difficult situations without quitting? How do you keep going when you're spiritually, emotionally, and physically exhausted? How do you resist the evils of this world that there is no way to avoid? How do you stay the course of righteousness through all the trials and heartache and disappointments? In the book of Matthew chapter 16, verse 6, Jesus says, take heed and beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and Sadducees. We had a lot of good talks today. Danny, it was a great talk. You need to beware of the leaven of the world. The leaven of the world is going to say it's too much. What you're going through is too much. It's too hard. It's not fair. You shouldn't be in this situation. That's what the leaven of the world will do. And so you need to be very careful, because worldly thoughts are going to lead you to give up the fight. Tell you it's too hard, it's too long, it's too mean, it's too rough, and furthermore, I don't deserve all this. In the book of Revelation 21, verse 7, he who overcomes shall inherit all things. James told me, I was showing him what I did. James said, you like that verse? So, yeah, I like it. I'll tell you, it teaches me two things. One, everybody's going to have things to overcome, all of us. And two, there's a blessing for not giving up on the fight. A blessing. He said, he who hath an ear to hear, let him hear what the Spirit says to the churches. To him who overcomes, I will give to eat from the tree of life, which is in the midst of the paradise of God. Don't quit. So that's the message for you today. Don't quit. Never give up. Doggedly follow the Lord. Even when it's hard. Even when it stinks, even when you're exhausted, even when you think you can't, never give up. Who is someone in the Bible who gave up? I decided I'd give you two examples. One is a woman named Job's wife. She's plumb give up. I've got a really sweet wife. Has encouraged me and helped me. Never one time has she come to me and said, I just wish you'd curse God and die. That would be a pretty brutal blow at me. That would be a trial for sure. There's another person I know about to give up. Judas he give up. You know what he got to doing? He got to thinking about worldly things. He got to thinking about the money. And he got to thinking about all the things he went through. And he got to dwelling on those things. And you know what his end was. We're all familiar with where he ended up. He gave up. Can you withstand the evil that's around you? There's evil influences everywhere. Can you handle the thoughts that will be presented to your mind? Will you fold under pressure? And will you give up on the fight? Proverbs 12, verse 26, the righteous should choose his friends carefully, for the way of the wicked leads them astray. So I guess if you want to take down points, number one points is be careful who you associate with. Be careful how you let the world into your mind. Guard your mind. Choose your friends wisely. And spend time and be with people who love the Lord and are dedicated to the Lord. That's going to help you to not give up on the fight. The book of 1 Peter, chapter 1, verse 13, therefore gird up the loins of your mind, be sober, and rest your hope fully upon the grace that is to be brought to you at the revelation of Jesus Christ. I've been switching from King James to New King James, so I'm struggling a little. Gird up the loins of your mind. The word means to tie up your robe. You know, the ancient people wore not blue jeans. They were unlucky in that regard, I guess. But they wore these long robes, and if you're going to try to walk or even especially run, you're going to need to tie that robe up a little higher so it didn't stay down around your legs and it would trip you and you'd fall. You'd have a really hard time moving about and working. And so the idea of girding up is the sense of preparing yourself for activity or action. And so when you gird up the loins of your mind, you are preparing your mind for activity, we might say that. We're preparing our mind for some course of action that we're going to take. That's the idea that he gives here, or the principle that I want you to consider with me just for a moment here. And so you gird up the loins of your mind. You're preparing your mind for action or work. You're preparing your mind for something that's coming. And then he says, be sober. And I believe that basically is meaning calm, collected, self-controlled. And then he says, rest your hope fully. What do we have hope in? We have hope in the end, don't we? We have hope in heaven. I want you to think about this for a minute. Truth is, we got one hope. One. Heaven. That's it. That's it. Be nice to retire, wouldn't it? Retire. You know what happens to people that retire? 10 or 12 years, they die. What's after that? Judgment Day. I had a great-great-grandpa retired at age 40. He did a lot better than me, evidently. And guess what? He lived to be 90. He was retired for 50 years. Guess what? He's going to meet God at the judgment. There's one hope. And it's not the hope to have wealth or success or fame, or we could talk about any other kind of a thing, I suppose. But the hope that we have is in Christ Jesus. And if we rest ourselves on that hope, then we cannot give up the fight. I've got to stay faithful to God, no matter what comes. Listen to me. You have to remain faithful to God, no matter what comes. Rest your hope fully on the grace brought to you, and that is through Jesus Christ. And so, prepare your mind for the trials that are ahead. They are certainly coming. I accused James the other day of having pride in youth. And I don't know if that was fair. We ride along in a car a lot together, and we have all kinds of debates, okay? And I'm not saying I always fight fair. Young people seem to think that their youth will last. It will not. That youth is fleeting, and there's going to be challenges that come. And the easiest thing to think about is health challenges. They're going to come. You may have financial challenges. You may have family challenges. You may have challenges that have to do with our nation and our standing in our nations. We could go on in those things. You need to prepare your mind for those trials. You need to gird up your mind and prepare to endure those trials. You need to train your mind to be calm and collected and self-controlled. You need to focus on the hope and the grace that's been given, because they demand that you do not give up on the fight. You see, hope and grace come through our Savior, Jesus Christ. And so that's one of the things that I think is number two today that can really help you. Train yourself. Gird up the loins of your mind. Hard times are coming, I promise you. Challenges in your life are coming. And I don't want you to give up on the fight. In Acts 12, verse 8, the angel said to him, this was Peter, gird yourself, tie on your sandals. So he did. He said, put on your garment and follow me. Just a tiny instance of the whole idea of get ready for activity, because it's coming and it's going to happen. So we'll take a minute here and look at the book of James chapter 1. Beginning in verse 2, my brethren, count it all joy when you fall into various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces patience. I will tell you, this is absolutely the opposite of what most anyone would tell you in America, to have joy in your trials. This is what the Lord asks us to do. And as Hugh has said, I want to glorify the Lord. If you want to glorify the Lord, then you need to try to adopt this perspective and this attitude. I think it'll be a tremendous help to you. Count it all joy when you fall into various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces patience. But let patience have its perfect work, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking nothing. Trials. We all have them. We're going to have them. And they test faith. Well, how's your faith? Are you as strong as you ever been? Are you not as strong as you could be? Well, I'll tell you something. One of these days, you're going to need to be stronger than you are now. One of these days, you're going to need more and more faith. Your family will need more. Your church will need more faith to withstand the trials. So your faith is tested through adversity and temptations and heartaches and challenges. That's a fact. And faith tested produces patience. Well, that's no fun. Generally, we don't like to be patient in those things. But he says faith tested produces patience. What does patience do? Well, we wait. We let things be. We be content where we are. We stay calm and cool and collected. And in some measure, we endure in those instances because he says faith produces maturity and we can become perfect and complete and able to handle, dare I say, any trial? Yes, any trial. But we've got to apply ourselves. We've got to let this work. We've got to have some growth in our faith to prepare for those kind of days. And so these trials will come, and what's your attitude? Because Jesus says our attitude is really going to make a difference. And he says, count it all joy. And you know what he's saying? Gird up the loins. Get your attitude right. Get your mind right. Get your self-control where it ought to be and focus on your faith. And the truth is, we need to take all these things that we've been taught today and we need to work and use those things together. We need to apply ourselves to those things so that we can have strength when those trials come. And so when those trials come, some people say, why is God doing this to me? You ever heard people say that? Yep. Why is God picking on me? Or they say, why won't God help me? He won't help me. I know he's not doing it, but he's allowing it. He could just stop all my problems. Or they say, why did God let this happen? Or maybe we have anger towards the individual who caused the trials. Maybe you have a car wreck and you go, oh, this bozo. Oh, this guy. And maybe you're hurting from it. Maybe you got a broken leg. Maybe you lost a loved one. It's real. And it leads to despair. And it leads to giving up the fight. When those trials come, if we've girded up the loins of our mind, we're really thinking in a spiritual way about those things. If we've got an attitude that my hope's in heaven, my hope's not to have just fun in this life, my hope's to get to heaven, the goal's heaven, not just enjoyment and pleasure here, then we're going to have a different attitude and say, I need to be patient during this trial. And we could even say, I'm happy that I have this opportunity to grow. I'm going to take it. I'm going to learn and I'm going to grow. And I ask the question, what can I learn? You know what I've learned? Lots of people are hurting. And going through trials has made me more compassionate to people who are hurting. I've learned that. And that ain't a bad thing to learn. How can I grow? In what area can I learn and grow during this trial? I'll tell you what, I'll just trust in Jesus because He's going to walk with me and He's going to help me. If I just have faith in Him and put my confidence in Him, I will realize God is blessing me even in the darkest of times, even when my heart's broke, even in the midst of tremendous loss. Good people are helping me, and it could be worse. So, gird up the loins of your mind. And prepare for those hard times. That way you won't give up on the fight. Paul said, "Are they ministers of Christ? I speak as a fool. I am more, and labors more abundant, and stripes above measures, and prisons more frequently, and deaths oft. From the Jews, 5 times I received 40 stripes minus one. 3 times I was beaten with rods. 1 I was stoned. 3 I was shipwrecked. A night and a day have I been in the deep." Oh, Paul, you know what he did for a living? Church work. I don't have a resume at all. I have no resume at all. I blew a transmission down Houston one time. It ain't too much of a trial. Paul says, I've gone through all these things. Were they hard? I'm sure they were. In journeys, often, I've done that. In perils of water? Nope. Perils of robbers? No. Perils of my own countrymen? Perils of the Gentiles? Perils of the city? Perils in the wilderness? Perils in the sea? Perils among false brethren? In weariness and toil and sleeplessness? Often in hunger and thirst and fasting? Cold and nakedness. We can all be thankful I'm not naked here in front of you today. Paul went through it, didn't he? He suffered in ways we do not. It could always be worse. Now I want you to notice what he said to the church at Colossae. "If indeed you continue in the faith, grounded and steadfast, and are not moved away from the hope of the gospel which you heard." You know what he's saying? Don't give up on the fight. He says, "Which was preached to every creature under heaven, of which I, Paul, became a minister. I now rejoice in my sufferings for you and fill up my flesh what is lacking in the afflictions of Christ for the sake of his body, which is in the church." Paul had an attitude. I will tell you, folks, he had a really good attitude. I count it a joy. I suffered for Christ. That ain't no big deal. He goes on a little further. As he girds up the loins of his minds, and this is what he says, 2 Corinthians 12, "And lest I should be exalted above measure by the abundance of the revelation, a thorn in the flesh was given to me, a messenger of Satan to buffet me, lest I should be exalted above measure. Concerning this thing, I pleaded with the Lord 3 that it might depart from me. And he said, my grace is sufficient." I don't know what it was. I wished we knew. I don't know what the problem was. People think it was his vision. Maybe it was. You know, I got a good friend who's about 57 years old. He's going blind. It's a bad deal, folks. He's prayed about it. I pray for him. It's bad. He's going blind. And it's going to be a trial for his family. It's going to be a change in their life, his wife, and their family farm. It's going to be a trial for a while. It ain't going to stop just for a little while. Paul had all these challenges that tested him, and he looked at those things. And God says, "My grace is sufficient for you. My strength is made perfect in weakness." And he says, "Therefore, most gladly, I will rather boast in my infirmities, that the power of Christ may rest upon me. Do you realize that if you remain faithful during your trials, do you understand that God's power will rest upon you? That's pretty wonderful, isn't it? That God will bless you and be with you. And so he goes on to say in verse 10, I take pleasure in infirmity and reproaches and needs and persecutions and distresses for Christ's sake. For when I am weak, then I am strong. And we're all going to have an opportunity to glorify God if we'll have the right attitude and if we'll think about those things. Now, there's something that's interesting about the trials that we'll face. In Hebrews chapter 10, verse 23, he says, let us hold fast the profession of our faith without wavering, for he is faithful that promised. And so we shouldn't give up the fight. We should be faithful even if it's hard. If we'll have the right attitude, it'll certainly be easier. And so I want to use a passage that Brother Mooney used. No temptation has overtaken you except such as is common to man. God is faithful. He won't allow you to be tempted above that you're able. Now, here's something I learned that I thought was interesting. James talks about those trials, and this here, it's the same word. He's talking about the same thing, same Greek word. And so God's not going to allow more to be put on you than you can handle. Can you trust that? Listen to me. God will not allow more than you can handle. But he will give you all you can handle. He sure will. Because you can handle it. So gird up the loins of your mind. The question is, do you want to live and never give up on the fight? Then you need to let our third phase, patience, have its perfect work. It's going to take some time to develop the attitudes. And so with time, patience will produce fruit. This maturity that we're looking for in our Christian walk. You know, when you plant a seed in your garden, you don't go the very next day pick the fruit. It's going to take some time. And that's the same idea. Remaining faithful in trials will in time produce fruit. And hopefully in our lives, we don't have a tremendous trial early on. Sometimes we do. Hopefully as we mature and grow, we'll be able to handle more of those trials, and we'll be an example to other peoples of how that should be. And so the fruit of maturity and strength and steadfastness comes through patience doing its work. And so part of what we got to do is endure those trials. Be faithful. Be an example to other people of how to get through a trial. I'm going to tell you something, folks. The way you handle trials affects people in a very tremendous way. If you go through something that's hard and you fold up like a wet napkin, if you can't come to services at all, if you can't do nothing but dwell on yourself and the troubles you're going through, I want to tell you, you teach a bad lesson. We need to teach people to focus on the joys of heaven. The troubles of life are short. Gird up the loins of your mind. You want to live and never give up the fight. By your patience, possess your souls. Patience is instructed and enjoined to us. 2 Thessalonians 3:13, but as for you, brethren, do not grow weary in well-doing. It's a good thing to be faithful in trials. Revelation 2, verse 10, do not fear any of those things which you're about to suffer. Indeed, the devil is about to throw some of you into prison that you may be tested, and you will have tribulation 10 days. Be faithful unto death, and I will give you a crown of life. You're familiar. I want to tell you the great example, Jesus. He said, the Son of Man must suffer many things and be rejected by the elders and chief priests and scribes and be killed, and after 3 days rise again. What do you think he's doing? Just telling the disciples so they'll know? Or is he preparing himself? Matthew 20, verse 28, just as the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life a ransom for many. He said it many times. This temple's going to be destroyed. I'll build it in 3 days. In many ways, he let people know he's girding the loins of his mind. He's preparing for a hard thing that's coming. Jesus had never sinned. He'd never been tortured. He never died. But he knew his great trial was coming. And he'd never been through anything like what was coming. In Matthew 26, verse 39, he went a little further and he fell on his face and he prayed, saying, "Oh, my Father, if it's possible, let this cup pass from me. Nevertheless, not as I will, but as you." You remember Jesus? Can you see him out there in that garden in the dusk of the day? And the disciples over there should be comforting and helping, and they're so sleepy, they're resting, and Jesus is begging God, "Help me." He's pleading with God as the sweat drips from his body. Is there another way? You know, I think at times we want to think this all this was a cakewalk for Jesus because he's God. You know what he is? Man. Just like you. Just like me. And he's hurting because he knows a hard day is coming. And then he says, "Do you think that I cannot now pray to my Father and he will provide me with more than 12 legions?" He had an out. You know, most of the time we don't have an out of our trials. Jesus could have said, "I quit." He could have said, "I'm done. I'll just give up the fight and the angels can come down and get me out of this situation and it'll just be over." And then God made him to be sin for us who knew no sin, that we might become the righteousness of God of him. I'll tell you something about the nature of Jesus. He hates sin. He'd never sinned. He'd never come in contact with sin. He was the guy that was going around forgiving people of their sins and healing people of their infirmities. And now the great trial of his life is at hand, and he's going to become that which he hates for you, to bear your burden, to carry you through the darkest, the dirtiest, and the greatest failures of your life. He had to become that which was his nature to abhor. And he says, my God, why have you forsaken me?" And the first time that I'm aware of, he's alone. And the great trial of his faith, the great trial of his mind, and the great trial of his body, he was alone. And I'll tell you something I've learned. He never gave up. I want to show you how I think we know. He said, "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do." Even in the midst of such pain and heartache and suffering, he was fighting for the souls of those men and women that were there and for the soul of you and I, and he never gave up on the fight. I tried to think of a real good way to wrap this up. And this is what I thought of, so bear with me just a minute. In the book of Hebrews chapter 11, we have a lot of faithful people. And I mean, we could start out over here with, I don't know how well y'all can see it, but Abel. And then we've got Enoch and Noah and Abraham and Sarah and Moses. And it just goes on and on. And When we read in Hebrews 11 of all these people of faith and the trials they endured and the hardships they endured and the walk that they went down, and I thought about just reading the whole chapter, but there's a point in Hebrews 11, he says, "What more shall I say?" So I ask you today, what more can I say to you? I made a list of heroes. And these are people who did not give up on the fight. Some of them you know. Some of them you don't. Some of them's names I'll protect. My grandmother was 95 years old when she died. She lived in a nursing home the last 7 or 8 years of her life, and one day on my phone, Kenny Rhodes, I got a ding and looked up, and it was Facebook, and I had a friend request from Nelda Dukes, and I went, "Those doggone scammers." It was legit. And this was during COVID, and my sweet little grandma got on Facebook with the purpose of watching the church services. And so she didn't know how to run it, and she didn't know how to do it, but she'd fuss at them little nurses, and they'd come down, they'd get the Facebook live stream going, and then she'd squawk at all their little neighbors and say, "Y'all got to come watch church with me." And they did. And I was impressed. My 90-year-old grandmother is evangelizing with Facebook. I like it. Just don't give up on the fight. I have a friend named Jim. Made a lot of bad choices. Ended up in prison. And I don't know if you know him, but you should. You know, today he's an evangelist, does evangelistic work, and never gave up on the fight. There come a day when he broke down and changed his life. There come a day where all the bad choices came to a point. He made a choice. Serve the Lord. There was a gospel meeting at a place not all that far from here, week-long meeting. There was a brother that came to church every service with a broken hip. Hurting, I mean, like the dickens. One of the brethren said, "You've set the bar pretty high for attending the services of the meeting." That's kind of true. I tell you, never give up on the fight. I met a fella some years ago, lived in another state, and like the guy, he did a lot of Bible studies with people, and I kind of thought that was great, and I stayed in his home with him and his wife, and was visiting one day with his wife, and she said, "You know, a lot of nights I'll wake up and he's not in bed." I said, "Well, I'm not familiar with your sleep habits," so she said, "I'll come in the living room, and he's weeping, praying." And I'll say, "What's going on?" He said, "I'm praying for these people that I'm trying to get a Bible study with." She said, "He'll wake up and pray and pray in the middle of the night. He does a lot of Bible studies." I'll tell you, I think it's heroic. Never give up on the fight. I got a good friend who had a very serious problem with alcohol, dominated his life, made a lot of bad choices, finally decided to go through a year-long rehab, and you know, He could have just quit. He could have just drank till he died. But today he's a teacher in the church. He's got a family and a home. He's a good example. Don't give up on the fight. I got a good friend named Tom. He told me he wanted to learn to do church work. And I said, well, come go with me. So I took him to a faraway land to do some gospel meetings. And one day he said, I want to talk to Rob. And I said, okay. I said, what are you going to do? He said, I'm going to try to baptize him. I said, well, get after it. I said, we've thrown everything at this guy but the kitchen sink. So go get it. Tom baptized Rob that year. Never give up on the fight. I met a lady, did Bible studies with her, and she obeyed the gospel. Her husband was very unhappy about that, and he began to harass her, and I don't know the best term, but I'd say persecute. He constantly was trying to get her to cease being a Christian and cease following the Lord and cease worshiping God. And it was day and night. And she came to a decision. To get a divorce. So that she could serve the Lord. Which she did. Till the very day she died. She faithfully served the Lord. Never give up on the fight. I know a man who had a terrible upbringing and a terrible home. And he finally was acquainted with the gospel and he became a Christian. And he began to go after his family. And he taught every member of his immediate family. And every one of them obeyed the gospel. Never give up on the fight. There's a bunch of Christians that work to promote the gospel in a congregation, and from time to time they have disagreements on names on their list to evangelize, and some of those individuals will say, we need to take this name off the list. They're never going to do anything. And at other times, people say, maybe we'll try one more time. And on one of these individuals, on about the 20th year, the lost returned to the fold. Never give up the fight. I got a phone call one day from a fella, and he said, do you know this gentleman? And I said, yeah, I know him. I said, he runs that little mechanic shop. And they said, yep. Yeah. They said, he's got cancer really bad. And I said, my goodness, I didn't know that. They said, he ain't going to live long. I said, well, that's terrible. And they said, he wants to see you. I said, I will go see him. 8-hour drive. I went to see him. Walked in the door, me and Jim Hayes, and I said, you don't look very good. And he said, I'm not doing very good at all. And I said, can I talk to you? He said, give it to me straight. I said, you're dying, and there ain't one thing to help you, and that's Jesus. That's it. And if you'd like, we'll help you to obey the gospel and have your sins washed away. He said, that's what I'd like. I said, let's go right now. He said, let's go. The problem with this guy, he's about 6'8". He's a huge dude. And we got a bunch of help. We had 4 or 5 of us that got him in a folding chair down in a swimming pool. We got out of that water, got in the pickup. I patted Jim Hayes on the shoulder. I said, how come you're so wet? He said, you like to drown in me. That was Thursday, and that brother in Christ died on Sunday. Never give up the fight. We have a brother named Coy Potter, who was an evangelist for many years, ended up in a nursing home at the end of his life, talked to all the little nurses that come in about God, studied and studied, and finally one of them obeyed the gospel while he was in the nursing home. Never, ever give up the fight. I know a brother in Christ who, when he was a very young child, his mother died. His father remarried a very abusive woman who physically and mentally abused him his entire upbringing. He grew up, married, became an elder in the church, and when his stepmother's health failed, he went and took care of her for 6 months in her home till she died. Never give up the fight. I know a man who, when he was young, had an affair on his wife. It was a very destructive thing in their family. Do you know they held it together? And they grew together. And today, he is an elder in the Lord's church. Never give up. I don't care what bad choices you make, don't give up the fight. I don't care if you waste 30 or 40 years of your life, don't give up the fight. I don't care if you abandon everything that's good and right and sacred. If you'll wake up and turn your life around, don't give up the fight. Never give it up. Because the hope of heaven is all we have. I'm going to tell you one more and then I'm going to close. Had a good friend who called me and said he had cancer. That broke my heart. He wasn't very old. I encouraged him. I tried to send him text and encourage him. And I told him one day, you fight. You get mad dog mean and fight. He said, I know one thing. I'm all in on Christ. That's all I got is Jesus. These people that I'm talking to you about, the world's not worthy of these good people. That's true. We're surrounded by this host of faith in Hebrews chapter 11, and what a wonderful message it is, but the truth is, you are surrounded by inspiration.